Okay, let's go ahead and we'll look to the Lord and we'll get started. Father, we're thankful for the morning. We're thankful for the opportunity we have to come together to study your word. And as we do this morning, again, might you use the day, use us throughout the day to accomplish your will in and through us as we relate to one another. And as we relate to your word this morning, might the Spirit be our guide. And we would be thankful for that now. Amen. Okay, we're going to continue on in our study of the pre-incarnate Son of God, as we've been doing for some time. And we've noticed that there was a personal presence of Jehovah with Jeremiah on various occasions. And so he was with him and he would speak to him, and Jeremiah would speak with Jehovah. They had a conversation from time to time as Jehovah met with him. He was apparently with him on other occasions when it doesn't really say so here. And maybe later on we might look into the book of Daniel, where we find the same phrase that we're looking at that does deal with Jehovah being with Jeremiah. But Jehovah has appeared to, well, doesn't use the word appear, but he was with him. He was to Jeremiah. And so he was, it was a personal presence with Jeremiah. And I would assume that it was an appearance, though we don't find that term, even as it says that he touched his mouth and such. And I would take it literally when it says that. But it goes on to, when he speaks to Jeremiah, he gives him personal instruction. He gives him some information concerning Judah, the southern kingdom. And he gives information according to what's going to happen with the impending judgment that will eventually come. And it's going to be a series of judgments that will come upon the southern kingdom, Judah. And also he then sometimes inserts something about the deliverance of his people in the future. And within all of this, we do see the pre-incarnate Son of God as he was to Jeremiah on 43 occasions where it says it. And then it goes on and describes what Jehovah says to Jeremiah, which Jeremiah is to say to the people. And so when he speaks, it isn't Jeremiah speaking from himself, but he says, "Thus saith the Lord, thus saith Jehovah." And so it is Jehovah who is speaking through Jeremiah, and he gives Jeremiah the words to speak. And so Jeremiah does just that. He speaks those words. And that's what we've been noticing, and the message has pretty much been that. But as the Lord appears to him or is with him and speaks to him on different occasions, you do have on those occasions the same information that Judah is going to be judged. And sometimes he says if they change, well, they could dwell in the land. Excuse me, they could remain in the land, and kings could reign and come and go if they would just obey, but they haven't. And so when we've noticed last week, we left off in chapter 18, and in Jeremiah chapter 18, Jeremiah has delivered the words from Jehovah, and twice in 18 we saw that the word of Jehovah was to Jeremiah in verse 1 and in verse 5. And then Jeremiah goes and he speaks to the people of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And then after he gives that message to them, they've determined that they're going to do away with Jeremiah. And we'll see that again, that Jeremiah, sometimes he gets bothered by it. It really affects him emotionally, and he does respond to Jehovah. We'll see that again. But yet he still comes back and trusts Jehovah in the end. And so as we looked at the end of the chapter 18, we saw that he was wanting some vengeance, and he will again. He will want vengeance upon this people. And so he recognizes Jehovah's omniscience in verse 23. And he said, "Jehovah, thou knowest all their counsel against me to slay me. And so they were out to kill him, and Jehovah knows that, and Jeremiah knows that Jehovah knows that they're out to kill him. But he says, forgive, don't cover their perversity. And he doesn't want a covering for their perversity. And he says, neither blot out their sin from thy sight, but let them be overthrown before thee. Deal thus with them in the time of thine anger. So he wants God to deal with them and to bring punishment upon this people who want to kill him. And he's the spokesman for Jehovah. And he knows that Jehovah knows. He knows that Jehovah knows what's going on amongst this people who are out to get him. Now, as we move on this morning into the 20th chapter, again, we're going to see warning to the southern kingdom, Judah, and there is going to be warning, and there will be personal things here that Jeremiah is to do. And when we introduced our lesson last week, we pointed out that sometimes God gave Jeremiah object lessons that were to be used for the people of Judah. And he's going to begin this chapter. We're going to see in the first 15 verses or so. Well, not only 15 verses. Why did I say that? Because I just jumped down to the end. But we're going to see at least down through verse 10. And maybe just beyond that, we're going to see that God gives him an object lesson to deal with Judah, the southern kingdom. And he gives them this, and it's an object lesson that God is going to bring judgment. They're going to be destroyed. So let's go ahead and begin, and we'll notice the potter's vessel as an object lesson to begin with. And then we're going to see that it results in some persecution upon Jeremiah in the end. And the potter's vessel, it does kind of cover that chapter, all of chapter 19. As an illustration, but you do have personal instruction to Jeremiah, and this would come from the pre-incarnate Son of God as he speaks to him, and he's to go into this, to the potter, to get a potter's vessel, and to go to this valley of the son of Hinnom. So let's go ahead and read verses 1 and 2 and see the background to this chapter. And so he begins, "Thus saith Jehovah." And so this is Jehovah speaking. And he speaks to Jeremiah. So he says, "Go and get a potter's earthen bottle, and take of the ancients, take from the ancients of the people and of the ancients of the priests." So he's to get the elders here in Israel, and to take them, and to go forth unto the valley of the son of Hinnom. And so he's to go to this particular valley, which he describes, which is by the entry of the east gate, where the sun would rise, and proclaim there the words that I shall tell thee. So, very explicit what Jeremiah is to do. So he's to go get a clay pot, a pot that would carry water, and he's to take it. Then he's to go out to this valley of the son of Hinnom. Now we're going to see this valley. It has different names applied to it, and the name is going to be changed by the time we get down to the context, just a few verses. But as we move on in verses 3 through 9, we see the message of judgment directed to the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. And the reason for the message is what he's to speak first. And so he's, and say, notice verse 3, "Hear ye the word of the Lord. Hear the word of Jehovah, O kings of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem." So they need to listen up to him and pay attention, because these are the words of Jehovah. Thus, and so he reiterates it, makes it very strong when he said, "Thus saith Jehovah of hosts," it says, Jehovah Sabaoth, the one who's over the heavenly armies, the Elohim of Israel. So he uses three titles here of Jehovah, though, here. He is not only Jehovah Sabaoth, but he's the one that's over the heavenly armies. And he's also the God of Israel. And so they need to pay attention. He's their God. But this is what Jehovah says now. "Behold, I will bring evil upon this place." He's going to bring calamity upon this place. the which whosoever heareth his ears shall tingle. When they hear about it, it's going to have an effect upon people who hear about the judgment that's going to be brought upon this place. Because they have forsaken me, that's the reason for it, and have estranged this place, and have burned incense in it unto other Elohim, whom neither they nor their fathers have known, nor the kings of Judah, and have filled this place with the blood of innocents, or those who are pure, the clean ones. And so they have been offering sacrifices to other gods, though. And so God is going to judge them as a result of that. That's the reason for it. They have built, but notice how far they went with this. They went as far as the Gentiles went with their idolatrous offerings. They have built also the high places of Baal to burn their sons with fire for burnt offerings unto Baal, which I commanded not, nor spake it, neither came it into my mind. Now this is what the Gentiles would do. They would sacrifice their sons upon the altar to their gods, to their idols, and to Baal in particular here. And that's what these were doing. They were doing this in Jerusalem. They were doing it, offering offerings throughout the land, and they were burning incense to other gods, to idols. And so this is going to bring about the judgment. And so Jehovah's going to change the name of this valley of the son of Hinnom. And it was known as, there's Tophet here. He says, therefore, behold, the days come, saith Jehovah. Now you notice he repeats, saith Jehovah. And so there's an emphasis. This isn't just Jeremiah speaking, but it's Jehovah who's speaking. Jehovah is making an emphasis, and we see down through the context here, we're going to see down throughout this context again and again and again, that it's Jehovah speaking. He makes a really, really impresses that on the minds of the listeners here, that Jehovah is speaking. This is what Jeremiah is to tell them. And so he says, therefore, behold, the days come, but they've been offering to these idols. And so he's going to change the name now. Behold, the days come, saith Jehovah, that this place shall no more be called Tophet. And so Tophet was seen as a place of burning. But this was the name of the valley, nor the valley of the son of Hinnom. So they were going to change the name. And notice what the change will be, and the valley, but the valley of slaughter. And so this valley outside of Jerusalem was no longer going to be known by its name as the valley that belonged to the son of Hinnom, nor Tophet, but it was going to now be the valley of slaughter. And there was going to be a great slaughter that would take place within this valley. And so the coming destruction is described further now as we move into verses 7 through 9. And I will make void the council of Judah and Jerusalem in this place. And so the council of those who were the leaders in Jerusalem and Judah, they were saying that Jehovah won't do this. And they were saying that they wouldn't be slain by the sword. They wouldn't have famine. They wouldn't have pestilence. None of this stuff would come. Don't listen to Jeremiah. None of this will happen. But notice he goes on and says, and I will cause them to fall by the sword. So he's going to, their prophecies and their counsel is coming to nothing. And I will cause them to fall by the sword before their enemies, and by the hands of them that seek their lives. And their carcasses will I give to be meat for the fowls of the heaven and the beasts of the earth. And so their corpses are going to be strewn about and feed and be food for the birds and the beasts. And I will make this city desolate. Then a hissing, there will be a whistling when people go by. Notice, everyone that passeth thereby shall be astonished and whistle because of all the plagues thereof. People will see the destruction of Jerusalem. And so Jerusalem, it was a very prosperous, beautiful city. God had blessed, and the city was well established, and it was quite a city. But it was going to be ruined and brought to total destruction. And I will cause them to eat the flesh of their sons and the flesh of their daughters, And so when it's under siege, they will be, they want to offer their sons to Baal, then they'll have that opportunity to feast on their children. And they shall eat every one the flesh of his friend in the siege, and straightness wherewith their enemies, and they that seek their lives shall straighten them. And so they're going to be in a hard place, and they will have famine, but they're going to be forced to cannibalize others in the city to survive during the siege. But the siege is coming, and it will be upon them soon. Now, as we come to verses 10 through 13, we have the breaking of the bottle as an object lesson as to what, and indicating what was going to happen in the future to Judah and to Jerusalem. And if you'll notice in verse 10, he says, "Then shalt thou break the bottle." Now, we saw that he was to go and get the bottle. So he's been carrying this bottle with him out to the Valley of Hinnom. And he's giving his message, and he's holding this bottle. And so now you have some personal instruction to Jeremiah when he's to break the bottle in the sight of the men that go with thee. "And shalt say unto them, Thus saith Jehovah Sabaoth." So again, he makes that emphasis. "Even so will I break this people and this city as one breaking a potter's vessel that cannot be made whole." You can't heal it again. "And they shall bury them in Tophet till there be no place to bury." So there will be burying them. They're going to be destroyed. And this valley that's going to be known as the Valley of Hinnom, a valley of slaughter from Hinnom, is going to be, there's going to be filled up. There's going to be a tremendous slaughter. And so there are not going to be many surviving this. "This will I do unto this place, saith Jehovah, and to the inhabitants thereof, and even make this city as Tophet." And so it'll be just a place, it's going to be a place of slaughter, this place of this valley of burning, though. "And the houses of Jerusalem and the houses of the kings of Judah shall be defiled as the place of Tophet, because of all the houses upon whose roofs they have burned incense unto all the hosts of heaven." So they've been burning to other spirit beings. I think we could say that they're doing it to the heavenly bodies, but they really are worshiping probably demons in the end. When it deals with heavenly, the host of heaven. But if they're doing it to the heavenly bodies, they're doing it to other gods, and have poured out drink offerings unto other gods, as we see. And so they were, their idolatry was going to catch up with them, and God is going to judge them in the future, just as a shattered clay pot is going to be broken. So these people in Jerusalem are going to be shattered and destroyed. They're going to come, and Jerusalem will be left in desolation. And so this is on its way, as Jeremiah is to tell the people. Now, you have the abuse that's brought against Jeremiah and the effects upon him as we'll move on down. But in the next chapter, this kind of gets to him. But he breaks the bottle, and I need to go on and finish the last of the two verses here, though, as we look at God's pronouncement. Jeremiah is to pronounce this judgment from God in the court of the temple. And this is not going to make him a popular individual here again. "Then came Jeremiah from Tophet. He did what Jehovah told him to do, what the pre-incarnate Son of God instructed him. And he came from Tophet, whither Jehovah had sent him to prophesy. And he stood in the court of the Lord's house, in the court of Jehovah's house, and said to all the people, Thus saith Jehovah Sabaoth, the Elohim of Israel, Behold, I will bring upon this city and upon all her towns all the calamity that I have pronounced against it, because they have hardened their necks, that they might not hear my words." And so they're not going to respond, and so he tells all the people that all of these things that he's spoken against this city are going to happen. They're going to come upon it. There's no escaping it. Well, like I said, it wasn't a very popular message that he does, and so Jeremiah is going to suffer the effects of this from his message, the message from Jehovah. And you notice how many times, though, as you go through here, he pronounces that it's thus saith Jehovah. And so yet the abuse is not going to be brought against Jehovah, but against his messenger. And that's going to have some effects upon Jeremiah as we look at chapter 20. And so you have the abuse from this fellow named Pashur at the beginning of chapter 20 and verse 1. And he was it says that he was the chief governor of the house of Jehovah, in the house of Jehovah. But he was a ruler there. He was a chief in charge of this. And there was, but in this, the first six verses here, it deals with this guy Pashur. And he did mistreat. He abused Jeremiah for his message. And if you look with me and we'll see that God's going to give him personal judgment, and he speaks of his personal judgment to him. Now Pashur, the son of Immer, the priest, and I might say also that Pashur was a common name. We'll see it in the next chapter also. You have the same name, and later on we find a Pashur, the other Pashur mentioned again, but they have different fathers, and so they're not the same Pashur. But anyway, this fellow here, Pashur, is the son of Immer, the priest, who was also chief governor in the house of Jehovah, heard that Jeremiah prophesied these things. So he heard these. I don't think he indicates he wasn't there to hear it firsthand, but he heard that he was doing this. Notice what he does, though. Then Pashur smote Jeremiah the prophet. So he hauls off and slaps him and put him in the stocks that were in the high gate of Benjamin, which was by the house of Jehovah. So he kind of put him out to public ridicule, put him in stocks, which twisted and wrenched him out of shape. It was very uncomfortable and a very painful situation for Jeremiah, and puts him out there in these stocks in public. And so he kind of makes a mockery of him as he's there. And he spends the night there in these stocks as this fellow is abusing him and he definitely rejects the message from Jehovah. And that's just what Jeremiah had just told him anyway. But now in the beginning of the next verse it says, "And it came to pass on the morrow that Pashur brought forth Jeremiah out of the stocks." And so he released him. So he just spent the night there, but it would have been a torturous night. And you didn't see Jeremiah on the evening news the next day because he was mistreated and all of this abuse was heaped upon him. But he did go through this, and it was a kind of a public insult to him. But you have a change. But Jehovah's going to judge this man, Pashur. He's going to change his name, as we see it. So Pashur, the thing we see here is Jeremiah is the one who speaks now when Jeremiah is released. And Jeremiah, then said Jeremiah unto him, "Jehovah hath not called thy name Pashur." And again, this name, we don't know exactly what the name was. Some have suggested it meant most noble, but it's probably not the root meaning of it. We don't know for sure exactly what it is. And the derivation, as far as I could find, was uncertain. Some have taken it to tear in pieces. But he's going to change the name to Magormisabah. Magormisabib is going to be his name now instead of Pashur. And his name was fear around about. And so it's going to be fear. His name is changed to terror, really. Terror round about. For thus, and he explains why his name is changed now. "For thus saith Jehovah, behold, I will make thee a terror to thyself." So his name is going to be changed. A terror, he's going to be surrounded by terror. "And to all thy friends, and they shall fall by the sword of their enemies." So they'd been saying that it wouldn't happen. The leaders had been telling the people it will never happen, what Jeremiah's been saying from Jehovah. "But they will fall by the sword of their enemies, and thine eyes shall behold it. And I will give all Judah into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall carry them captive into Babylon, and shall slay them with the sword. And so you're going to have a massacre here in Jerusalem. Pashur, this guy, is going to watch his friends and such. He's going to see a lot great slaughter here. And then there's going to be a carrying away to Babylon of those who are not slaughtered. Moreover, I will deliver all the strength of this city and all the labors thereof and all the precious things thereof and all the treasures of the kings of Judah will I give into the hand of their enemies, which shall spoil them and take them and carry them to Babylon. So everything they have will be hauled off. It's going to be carried off into Babylon. The city will be destroyed, and everything that they have is gone. And thou, now he comes down to the personal thing with this individual Pashur, and now thou Pashur, and all that dwell in thine house shall go into captivity. So this guy in his house, he's going to watch his friends being slaughtered by the sword, but he's going to go into captivity with his family, and thou shalt come to Babylon, and there thou shalt die and shalt be buried there, thou and all thy friends to whom thou hast prophesied lies. So he's one of these guys who is speaking lies to the people, that it wouldn't happen, but it is going to happen. Jeremiah gives him the word of Jehovah. It's going to happen. They're going to be carried into captivity, and others will die. So many of his friends will die, but we see that there are going to be many others. His family, they're going to be carried off into Babylon. They're going to die in Babylon in captivity. And so it is going to come. It's going to happen as they're going to be delivered into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, we want to move on into verse 7. And as we look at verses 7 through 9, Jeremiah begins to complain now. Now, we've seen his complaint before, and he begins to doubt things, and he says, "O Jehovah, thou hast deceived me." And so you've deceived me. I was deceived. You've enticed me into doing this thing. Thou art stronger than I. So it's kind of like Jehovah pushed him into doing this, and has prevailed. I am in derision. And he says, daily, all the day, throughout the day, everyone mocketh me there. And so they're just, everyone's a mocker to him throughout the day. And he's about had it, you can see. For since I spake, I cried out. I cried violence and spoil, because the word of Jehovah was made a reproach unto me and a derision all day. And so all the day he's been suffering as a result of speaking the words of Jehovah. And so he's not too happy about it at this time. But then we come back down to verse 9, and we see in verse 9 that he still continues his complaint, though. But he was almost ready to quit. That's what I wanted to say. He's just about ready to give up. Then said I will not make mention of him, nor speak any more in his name, that is, in the name of Jehovah. But his word was in mine heart. And so he was in my heart as a burning fire shot up in my bones, and I was weary with forbearing. He was tired of continuing on as he was, and I could not contain it, he says. He wouldn't contain it. He couldn't contain what was in his heart. So he had to continue speaking the words of Jehovah. But it really kind of got to him. And so, again, we can't be too tough on Jeremiah when we stop and look at him as he was about ready to give up. He had maybe more of an excuse than many of us when we're ready to give up, because he didn't have any divine help within him. He didn't have the indwelling Godhead, the Holy Spirit, to empower him, to enable him. But yet he, as a spokesman of Jehovah, did speak the words of Jehovah. And so this is where we see him. It's been tough on him, and it gets to him. Now you see some defamation here against Jehovah, though, as we move into verses 10 and 11, and it was against Jeremiah and his realization that Jehovah really was with him during this time, as the Jehovah was to him and spoke to him often. But Jehovah is with me, he starts off. Now, as a mighty, terrible one, Therefore, my persecutors shall stumble, and they shall not prevail. They shall be greatly ashamed, for they shall not prosper. Their ongoing confusion shall never be forgotten. So they're going to have perpetual confusion. It's going to be something that will continue on. But now, after Jeremiah recognizes that Jehovah is with him, and he sees that Jehovah will deal with his enemies, now he does want some vengeance, and he wants it now. But, O Jehovah Sabaoth, that triest the righteous, and he would be one of those who was righteous, but he, and seest the reins of the heart, that is the innermost parts of the heart. It's the word kidneys, but down where man really feels things, he says, let me see thy vengeance on them. So he cries out for vengeance on his enemies, for unto thee have I opened my cause. So now he's kind of just letting it hang out before Jehovah that he is going, as he's going through all of these things at the hands of those who were rebellious against Jehovah and rebellious against and were taking it out on Jeremiah. Now, as we come to verse 13, we come to Jeremiah has a song. He presents a song here, and he says, sing unto Jehovah. And so it sounds kind of like the Psalms, but he says, sing unto Jehovah. And so he does see that Jehovah will deliver eventually, and he sees that as the thing that will take place. And he moves on to hallelujah, praise ye the Lord. For he hath delivered the soul of the poor from the hand of evildoers. And so he sees that Jehovah is faithful to, and he will deliver those who are the afflicted from the hand of those who would bring calamity upon them who do evil. Now, he begins to feel sorry for himself again. And so I think you see a little bit of sorrow as he feels sorry for himself. And he wishes that he had never been born. He curses the day of his birthday. And it wasn't because he didn't get enough presents. He was just curses the day of his birth. And it really gets to him in the final verses of chapter 20. And he says, cursed is the day wherein I was born. Let not the day wherein my mother bare me be blessed. Cursed is the man who brought tidings to my father, saying, a man-child is born unto thee, making him very happy. And so cursed on these, on the event, and cursed on those who told his on the one who told his father. And let that man be as the cities which Jehovah overthrew and repented not. And let him hear the cry in the morning and the shouting at noontime. And so just let him go ahead and do and be like these, because he slew me not from the womb. Instead of telling his father, he had just as soon been slain from his womb. I happen to have a cross reference back to Job. This sounds a little bit like some of Job's ailments and some of the ways that Job was affected when you go back and see all that Job was going through. But he didn't slay me from the womb, or that my mother might have been my grave and her womb to be always great with me. He wished he had never been born. He'd been stillborn at the best. Wherefore, he says, I came forth out of the womb to see labor and sorrow. And so he's just overwhelmed by all of his problems. But notice he says that my days should be consumed with shame. He says, when I came forth out from the womb to see labor and sorrow, that my days should be consumed with shame. Is that why he was born? Just to be consumed with shame? And so he wonders why he was even born, because he's going through all of this, all of these indignities against him. Anyway, can't say it. Okay, and we come to chapter 22, 21. I wanted to skip chapter 21, I guess. But we come to the beginnings of the prophecy against Judah. And now we kind of move into a second part of the prophecy of Jeremiah. In the first part, he dealt with kind of generalities beginning in the times of Josiah and going through looking at the judgments that would come upon Judah and the impending judgment and the ways that would what would happen that God was going to bring upon them. And so you look at the as you look through it, you do see as we in this chapter, it begins something different now. We saw in chapter 1, we saw about three kings or so, Josiah and some of his sons named that were involved in this prophecy. But as we come to chapter 21, now we come to the first naming of specific kings. And like I said, this is not written chronologically. Zedekiah is the last king to be removed out from Judah. And so this is when Nebuchadnezzar comes, and he'll come in 586 B.C. He's going to destroy the city, and it will be desolate. And so Jeremiah is prophesying concerning the end, and this is right down towards the end Judah's history in the land. Now, there was a governor who was left in the land at the very end of Jeremiah. Gedaliah was left there, but Zedekiah is the last king. And interestingly enough, Zedekiah takes the place of his brother as king. And so his brother, Jehoiakim, is removed. And you have this fellow, Zedekiah, his brother. His name was changed. I believe, as I remember, it was Eliakim, but his name was changed to Zedekiah, if I remember. But it is Zedekiah. And so we know him as Zedekiah. They sometimes had more than one name, as will be important in a couple of in another chapter or so here. But as we see, he speaks of Zedekiah. So it's not chronological. He's jumping ahead to Zedekiah in his prophecy. And then he's going to fall back on those who preceded Zedekiah. He's going to move back to deal with Jehoiakim's son, and he's going to deal with Jehoiakim's brother who preceded him for a very short reign before he was hauled off into captivity. But anyway, this would fit a little later on in Jeremiah. It doesn't fit right here. But you notice the first verse, he's going to deal with captivity that's going to come, and he begins dealing with the kings now and by name. And again, we find that the very first thing in verse 1, the word which came unto Jeremiah from Jehovah. And so what was this word that was? And it didn't come, but it was to Jeremiah. And so we have that same phrase, the same verb here. This is the word that was to Jeremiah. So it looks at a personal presence of Jehovah as he's going to speak to Jeremiah at this time and speak further. But you notice the word was unto Jeremiah from Jehovah when King Zedekiah sent unto him Pashur, the son of Melchiah. Not the son of Immer, but Melchiah. So this is a different Pashur. And Zephaniah, the son of Maaseiah, the priest, saying. But anyway, you have these two important men from the leaders in Judah. And so King Zedekiah sends these men to inquire of Jeremiah. And that's what the next verse begins with, his inquiry concerning what is going to happen with respect to Judah with Nebuchadnezzar coming upon them. And Nebuchadnezzar is likely upon the way now. The destruction is imminent, and the siege is very close. And so they were to inquire, I pray thee, in verse 2, that's what they say, from Jehovah for us, for Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar was just another spelling of Nebuchadnezzar. Some think that this was maybe the original spelling of the term, but it's spelled in two ways here. But we'll just say Nebuchadnezzar, since that's the way we know him. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, maketh war against us. And so he's coming, and there's the siege is about to begin. If so be that Jehovah will deal with us according to all his wondrous works, that he might go up from us, that he might send Nebuchadnezzar away from us. And so they wanted to know what would happen. Now Zedekiah, he was kind of a vassal to Nebuchadnezzar, and he was kind of a wishy-washy fellow. He knew what he should have done, but he didn't do what he should have done. He wouldn't stand up for what was right, and he wasn't too terribly hard on Jeremiah at this point, but he did inquire anyway about what was going to take place. So now, as we move into the chapter, we come to Jeremiah's response to Zedekiah in verses 3 through 7. And he's going to respond, first of all, to Zedekiah personally in verses 3 through 7. And then we come down, we'll see that he addresses the people and then the king, the household of the king. And so as we move into this, he says in verse 3, "Then said Jeremiah unto them, thus shall ye say to Zedekiah." We're back to, "Thus saith Jehovah, Elohim of Israel now. Behold, I will turn back the weapons of war that are in your hands, wherewith ye fight against the king of Babylon and against the Chaldeans, which besiege you without the walls. And I will assemble them into the midst of this city." So they're going to come through, and notice, it's not just he's going to permit this to take place. He has delivered Israel before, but now, because of the idolatry and all that's gone on, and it all went back specifically, especially back to Manasseh and his evil reign, but these kings are doing worse and worse, some of them. And so he says, "And I myself will fight against you." So God is going to turn. Jehovah's turning against his chosen people. But he says, "I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and with a strong arm." So you see something of he's going to come at them with his omnipotence, with his outstretched hand and his strong arm. He's going to be acting with his omnipotence against them, even in anger and in fury and in great wrath. And so he uses terms that the man would understand concerning the anger, fury, and wrath, as he's not very pleased with them. And so he says, "And I will smite the inhabitants of this city, both man and beast, and they shall die of great pestilence." So there would be. They're going to be under siege. They're going to be in famine. The sword will eventually take them, but there will also be sickness as a result of the famine and all. "And afterwards, saith Jehovah, I will deliver Zedekiah, king of Judah, and his servants, and the people, and such as are left in this city, from the pestilence, and from the sword, and from the famine, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of their enemies, and into the hand of those that seek their life. And he shall smite them with the edge of the sword. He shall not spare them, neither have pity, nor have compassion upon them." And so you see, they're going to be delivered over. The people are going to be delivered over to Nebuchadnezzar. "Now to the people," he says, "and unto this people thou shalt say, thus saith Jehovah, behold, I will set before you the way of lives or the way of death." So there's a choice, life or death. They can make the choice, and so they need to listen up to what he says. If they do, they can go ahead and live. If they don't do what he does, they're going to be slaughtered with the sword. And so notice he explains, he says, "He that abideth in this city shall die by the sword, and by the famine, and by the pestilence." Now that's just what we saw earlier. God said this is what they were going to be hit with, these three things. And so they're going to die if they stay in the city. But he that goeth out and falleth to the Chaldeans that besiege you, he shall live, and his life shall be unto him for a prey. He'll be taken in spoil. And so he'll be taken away in captivity. For I have set my face against this city. So he's going to fight against them, but he's set his face against this city for calamity and not for good, saith Jehovah. It shall be given into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall burn it with fire. And so, again, you have the prophecy of the final destruction of Jerusalem as it's going to be destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, and this will take place in 586. And so this is just a couple of years before the fall, likely, of Jerusalem. And so the people, they have a choice: either get out and turn your and turn yourself over to the Chaldeans, stay in the city, you're going to die. Now, the next thing that he's to address is the house of David. And touching the house of the king of Judah, say, hear ye the word of Jehovah, O house of David. Thus saith Jehovah, execute judgment. You judge judgment in the morning and deliver him that is spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor, lest my fury go out like fire and burn, that none can quench it because of the evil of your doings. Behold, I am against thee, O inhabitant of the valley and rock of the plain, saith Jehovah, which say, who shall come down against us, or who shall enter into our habitations? And so he's telling those in the king's household that this is what's going to happen. You need to be fair in your judgments and things, and if you're not, but they are saying this, and we've seen the lies that were said, that the calamity would not come upon them, but it will come. And so they will say, who can do this? But notice what Jehovah says, and you notice he's going to fight against them himself. His face is set against them, and he's going to execute this judgment. He says, but I will punish you according to the fruit of your doings, saith Jehovah. And I will kindle a fire in the forest thereof, and it shall devour all things round about it. And so round about her, round about Jerusalem, and the house of the kings are going to be destroyed. And so this is what will take place. But Jehovah will use Nebuchadnezzar to bring judgment upon Jerusalem and Judah. Now, as we come down to the 22nd chapter, we have the message to the kings concerning the potential for deliverance or desolation for the king's house. And so they do have, he gives them a choice, but their choice is going to be to go on as they have been. And so destruction is eventually coming upon them. And in chapter 21, it's right there. But now we move back a little, and so we come to some other kings as we move into chapter 22. And so there's instruction to the king to do justice to the people in verses 1 through 9. And again, it's addressed to the king of the house of Judah. And Jeremiah is going to be sent, and he describes something of the kings who sit upon the throne of David. Thus saith Jehovah, go down to the house of the king of Judah and speak there this word. And so Jeremiah sent down to speak in the king's house and say, hear the word of Jehovah, O king of Judah, that sittest upon the throne of David. Thou and thy servants and thy people that enter in by these gates. And so any who enter into the king's house, they need to pay attention to what he's going to say. Now you notice the king here is sitting upon the throne of David. The throne was promised to David, and David will once again sit upon this throne and in the future. But it's David's throne, and these are sitting upon the throne of David. It's not their throne, but it's the throne of David. And so they sit upon the throne of David. Now, ultimately, David's greater son, the one who's been speaking to Jeremiah and telling him what to say, this son will one day sit upon the throne as David's greater son when he establishes his kingdom in the future. But these were sitting upon the throne of David, and there is a problem, definitely a problem with these kings who are sitting there. Now, there's a potential for kings to sit upon this throne, and they're going to sit there for David, and if they do what they are supposed to do, that would be keeping the law. But they, of course, are not doing that. So in verses 3 and 4, we see the potential laid out to the king of Judah. And so it says, thus saith Jehovah, execute ye judgment and righteousness, and deliver the spoiled, those who have been spoiled out from the hand of the oppressor, and do no wrong, do no violence to the stranger. The orphans, nor the widow, and so they're not to wrong the orphans and the widow, neither shed innocent blood in this place. For if you do this thing, indeed, Then shall there enter in by the gates of this house kings sitting, and we could say, for David upon his throne. And I have a footnote that a column that reads that way, but it's not so much upon, but they're going to sit upon David's throne, but they're going to sit for David upon his throne. And so they rule from David's throne. And riding in chariots and on horses, he and his servants and his people, if they do this thing. So they need to be fair in what they do and right in what they do and dealing with different individuals. And yet these kings didn't tend to do that sort of thing. So the reverse is what will happen to them. So judgment is going to come because of their failure to obey Jehovah. For if you will not hear these words, I swear by myself, saith Jehovah, that this house shall become a desolation. And so this house of the king of Judah is going to be desolate. And there's a potential, though, to turn Judah from what it is and change it to a barren landscape, so to speak. For thus saith Jehovah unto the king's house of Judah, thou art Gilead unto me. Now Gilead, it was more had more trees and shrubs and things up in the northeast of the country, and up in the northern kingdom area. But that's what they were to him, he says. And the head of Lebanon, remember the cedars of Lebanon. Yet surely, he says, I will make thee a wilderness and cities which are not inhabited. And so there's no one who will inhabit these cities. And so right now they're just kind of like a fertile, kind of a forested plain, sort of, where you have forests and things. But he says that's not going to be in the future if they don't listen. And so he's going to bring destruction upon them. And I will prepare destroyers against thee, every one with his weapons, and they shall cut down thy choice cedars and cast them into the fire. Now, when you look at the choice cedars, Jerusalem wasn't known for its cedars, but it had a lot of cedar. And where did the cedar come from? The cedar came from Lebanon. And so David's house was built of cedar. The kings built out of cedar. The temple had cedar. You had cedar built around it. And so you had a lot of cedar. A lot of the forests of Lebanon were depleted and carried down to Jerusalem. But he said he's going to take from your choice cedars and cast them into the fire. It's all going to be destroyed. And that's the impending judgment that will come. And now the nations, again, we've seen them pass by before as they would wag their heads and whistle at them, whistle about it. Whew. What a destruction. What happened to this place? Now notice, and many nations shall pass by this city. And instead of by, they're going to pass over this city, and they shall every man say to his neighbor, wherefore hath Jehovah done thus unto this great city? And so again, it was a great city, but they're going to see the destruction, and they will recognize, well, why did Jehovah, what did he do this to this city for? Well, then they shall answer, because they have forsaken the covenant. And so they've abandoned the covenant of Jehovah, their Elohim, and worshipped other Elohim and served them. So what did they do? They broke the Mosaic law. They abandoned it, left it behind, and we've seen that building up to this point. Jeremiah's referred to that over and over again, or Jehovah has through Jeremiah. But they keep breaking the law and the first commandment. They did put other Elohim up above Jehovah on their place on their idol shelves, and so they worshipped other and served other gods. So Jehovah is going to destroy them, and in the future it will bring a response from those who pass through that city. Now, in the next three verses, we come to a warning—not a warning, but an instruction—concerning the king who was Josiah's son, who took his place briefly. And so he deals with he says, weep not for the dead, nor bemoan him. And I believe here he is looking back to Josiah, a good king. When he died, don't weep for him. But weep sore for him that goeth away, for he shall return no more nor see his native country. So there's one who's going to be carried off captive. Josiah, who died, he was okay. But then we move to his son, which would be Jehoahaz, and he was carried away, and his name is here Shallum. For thus saith Jehovah touching Shallum, the son of Josiah, king of Judah. So Josiah died, his son has taken his place, and he reigned instead of Josiah his father, which went forth out of this place. He shall not return thither any more, but he shall die in the place whither they have led him captive, and shall see this land no more. So they kind of joined hands with the Egyptians before the Babylonians came, and Pharaoh carried this fellow Jehoahaz, or Shallum, carried him off into captivity, and appointed his son Jehoiakim to be king in his stead, or his brother Jehoiakim was king in his stead. And so he was going off into Babylon, and so Jeremiah again by Jehovah tells him not to weep for Josiah, but for his son who's being carried off. Now, as we move into verses 13 and 14, or 13 through 19, you have judgment coming upon Jehoiakim, and so you have a woe to his house, and so on. Now, woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness, and his chambers by wrong, by judgment, that useth his neighbor's service without wages. He takes his neighbor's favor, but he doesn't pay him, and giveth him not for his work. That saith, I will build me a wide house and large chambers, and cutteth him out windows, and is covered with cedar and painted with vermilion. So he builds himself a fine house. He does it at the expense of his neighbor. But he says, as he moves on, he's going to be. He describes how Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, wasn't like his father. As he asked the question, shalt thou reign because thou closest thyself in cedar? Did not thy father eat and drink and do judgment and justice, and then it was well with him? He judged the cause of the poor ones and the needy, then it was well with him. Was not this to know me, saith Jehovah? And so he reminds Jehoiakim now that his father was quite different, the opposite of what he was in his behavior towards the people of the land. And Jehoiakim, he wasn't like his father at all. But thine eyes and thine heart are not but for thy covetousness, and for to shed innocent blood, and for oppression, and for violence to do it. And so he was really quick to violence upon those whom he could gain by. Therefore, thus saith Jehovah concerning Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the of Judah, they shall not lament for him, saying, ah, my brother, ah, sister. They shall not lament for him, saying, ah, Lord, ah, or ah, his glory. He shall be buried with the burial of an ass, drawn and cast forth beyond the gates of Jerusalem. And so Jehoiakim, he was not a good king. He did worse than his fathers before him, the bad kings. And Josiah, his father, was a good king, but he was nothing like his father in the least in his treatment of the people. And so he's going to kind of go down in infamy when he's buried. He's not going to be buried in Jerusalem with the kings, in the place of the kings in Jerusalem, but he was going to be cast out, buried outside of the city, beyond the gates of Jerusalem, it says anyway. And it was just like a donkey being buried. There was no import nor with Jehoiakim because of his evil. And so he was living in splendor then, but his end was not going to be so good. Well, we come to kind of we come to an important place in the lineage of David as we move into the next section, and we'll have to pick that up next week, dealing with these kings. But you do have those who sat upon the throne of David back in verse 22:2, and they sat upon his throne. And there were those who could sit for David upon his throne, but we're going to see that this line is going to be kind of cut off. And so it's going to be an end of the line that came down through Solomon. It's going to end before Zedekiah sits upon the throne. Okay, well, that's a little bit of history, but as we've looked at it, we've just noted again, the one who spoke, though, when it says, "Thus saith Jehovah," it was the pre-incarnate Son of God who spoke and who was to Jeremiah in each instance. And he's the one who is giving the judgment against Jerusalem and Judah, and he's the one who Jeremiah represents. And so with that, we better close. Father, we're thankful again for your word. We're thankful again as we look back into the Old Testament. We do see the activity of your pre-incarnate Son as he did deal with your people back there, as they are his people as well as Jehovah. We just were thankful that the one who was there appearing and present to people and speaking with them was none other than the one who ultimately would become flesh, and he would speak in a different way with people. And yet through him, he did, as he fulfilled your ministry here upon the earth, and as he fulfilled the cross work, that he has become our Savior. And so we're thankful again for the person, the second person of the Trinity, who is the Lord Jesus Christ, and the one who is seated at your right hand today. We're thankful for him this morning. Amen.